In the vast sea of OCR podcasts, one program rises above the rest, distinguishing itself as the undisputed authority on all things obstacle course racing. This is Not That Podcast.
Seriously.
Hey.
Welcome to the Mud Movement's More Than Mudcast, a show about overcoming obstacles on the course and in life. Hear people from within and outside of the OCR community share extraordinary stories of perseverance and success.
You can do it!
We also mix in a healthy dose of chaos and ridiculousness.
That's a word, right?
Get ready for a different type of OCR experience. The More Than Mudcast.
More Than Mudcast.
It's not a podcast.
It's a show.
The word of the day is hormophobia. Hey guys, it's Coley for the Mud Movement. Welcome to the More Than Mudcast with three really cool guests today. We're going to talk to Spartan's youngest pro team member, VJ Jones, who, by the way, won his first elite Spartan race at the age of 16. Yeah. We'll also talk zombies with the CEO of ActiveWorks LLC, producer of Zombie Charge, Mud and Obstacle Run. And then finally, you know, we call this the More Than Mudcast because, well, we don't just talk about OCR, but want to talk to successful people from all walks of life. Well, today, you'll hear from Jason Kiley, who is a world champion like you've never seen. It'll be a fun interview. Stick around for that. So, hormophobia is the fear of shock. And it's kind of weird because hormophobia can refer both to electrical shock and the shock that comes from, like, surprising news. Well, today I'm more concerned with the former than the latter because the Mud Movement will experience our first Tough Mudder this weekend. And as I was telling my Mud Movement partner Lux, my stomach is in knots, all because of Tough Mudder's signature obstacle, electroshock therapy. Now, I think it's safe to say that nobody likes to be electroshocked, but seriously, I'm dealing with some heart-pounding, cold sweat anxiety about getting shocked. Oh, and repeatedly. Yeah, that's the worst part of it. It's not a question of whether you'll get shocked. It's how many times and for how long. You know, the thing is, I think I know why I'm sweating this obstacle so much. I want to tell you that story later. Plus, we will hear from our guests. First, the need to know. More and more racers are signing up for the 2017 Tough Mudder Championship Series, especially after TM's recent announcement of $2,500 payouts to regional winners, both men and women. A second at regionals will win $1,000 and $500 for third. Then, the Tough Mudder World Championship pays $10,000 for first, $2,500 for second, and $1,000 for third. So, while many might say that no one race series can buy your loyalty, they are certainly welcome to try. Mudstacle, the media hub of the UK's obstacle course racing and mud running community, has opened registration for their fourth ever Mudstacle Awards Gala event. Now, even if you don't follow obstacle racing outside of the States, I think this event is worth paying attention to because it foreshadows the type of OCR community events we could and hopefully will eventually have here in the States. And sure, Mud Run Guide and perhaps some other media outlets present year-end awards, but none to my knowledge have an actual event where, you know, the community dressed to the nines can attend together. So yeah, the Mudstacle Awards had over 300 party goers last year, including racers and reps from 20 different brands. This year's event will be held in December. Finally, congratulations to Hunter McIntyre for being named among the 50 fittest men. According to a new list published by Sports Illustrated, the list includes Olympians, CrossFitters, and professional athletes from a variety of sports. McIntyre was the only obstacle racer listed on the men's list, and, well, none were on the women's list, which we think is a terrible oversight. Still, I guess any validation of the sport from SI has to be a good thing.
Everyone runs for a reason. What's yours? Tell us your story at themudmovement.com.
Hello.
Hey, it's VJ.
Yeah. Hey, VJ. Thanks for calling, man. Especially this close to Spartan World Championship at Lake Tahoe. You are going, right?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, of course you are. VJ is the youngest member of the Spartan Pro Team. He joined this year at the age of 18. But you actually won your first Spartan Elite race when you were only 16, right?
Yeah, it was a Sunday sprint in SoCal.
That is amazing. Now, here in 2017, you won the sprint again in SoCal. You got a first in Vegas, Seattle, and Asheville, plus a second in Arizona, second at the Spartan Super in Vegas, and also a terrain race second this year. So you've had a really successful year, at least as far as us mortals are concerned, but I know you had higher hopes, and we'll talk more about that in a second. First, tell us about how all of this started for you and how you got so fast.
Well, I started in high school my freshman year. I joined cross country. My mom thought I'd be good at it, so I went after it, and it all kind of worked out for me. set the freshman record at my school for the 3 mile and did track and field. And I was really good at all events, but not really great at any one event, which was frustrating, but it was cool at the same time. I went to state in high school for cross country, and I went to state for track as well, but as a sprinter. I was kind of a all-around athlete rather than just a distance kind of guy.
Yeah, so when did we start throwing some obstacles in there?
My first race was called the Love Mud Run. It was like a little private event over in Vail Lake for Valentine's Day. And I just showed up because my dad wanted me to try it out. And I saw him do a race earlier the previous year. So I went over there, hopped in, and I was leading the race by a few minutes, like a half mile in already. And then I stepped in a mud pit and lost my shoe. And I ran the next 2.5 miles without a shoe, and I ended up getting second place. And then after that, I wanted some redemption. Went and did the Down and Dirty, another local race, and ended up winning that by about 5 minutes. Wow. And it just kind of got hooked. It was a good balance of strength and speed and endurance, so I liked it a lot.
That's cool. Now, of course, local races seldom have real deal obstacles, so making the leap to a Spartan can be a little bit of a reality check, I'm sure. What was that like for you?
Yeah, my first Spartan was in 2013. It was in December. It was the Malibu Sprint. And I was doing really well. I was running in second place right behind Glenn Race, actually. And I was doing everything. You know, the sandbag carry wasn't too bad. I was managing well. And then we got to the Hercules, and I dropped back to seventh place. It took me almost 2 minutes to get the dog up on that obstacle because I was still a pretty skinny cross-country guy. And it was pretty much a learning experience from that because it took a lot more strength than any of the other races did, and everyone was a lot faster at that too. So it was cool, and then I knew I wanted to be able to win one of those because I knew it would be a pretty big thing for me at the time to win a Spartan rather than just some local race. Then I started really working for it. Next year, I made it happen.
Wow. So 16 years old, winning a Spartan. And I know that Spartan can't approach every person who wins a race about being on the pro team, but you had to have grabbed the attention of a few folks. How soon was it until talks of joining the pro team?
After that win, I started, you know, doing well and placing in other races. I was actually looking for sponsors, reaching out to companies and stuff like that. No one would answer me. I know, a 17-year-old kid. No one took me really seriously, but as soon as I turned 18, Spartan reached out, and that's how I landed on the team this year. I think it just took me, you know, being legal and being able to sign my own documents kind of helped turn the page.
So, Vijay, you're there in California. Are you training in a gym, or do you have plenty of hills to run?
I have a decent amount of hills and trails nearby me. I don't have to drive too far. SoCal's pretty good area. I don't go to any kind of obstacle racing gym or anything like that. I sometimes will stop by the rock climbing gym for fun usually, but a lot of it's at home. I have a few sandbags and a pull-up bar, and I make it work.
Well, and you said your dad got you into all this. Is he still a part of what you're doing?
Yeah, he helped facilitate a lot of my racing and training. He built me a rig in our front yard. Awesome. To practice on, which is was really awesome.
Very cool. Well, your rig work and, of course, your running is top-notch. You mentioned the heavy carries, and you're still super slim. I'm jealous. But are the heavy carries still affecting your race?
Yeah, I mean, I struggle in the double sandbag more than I think a lot of the other top guys do. So it's my primary weakness. But a lot of the other carries and strength obstacles I've worked on and become pretty proficient with. I don't struggle with the Hercules anymore, the Yokohama tire. I look forward to that obstacle. I love it. And the bucket, I've actually grown to look forward to as well. I seem to manage pretty well. I'm not the fastest, but by far I'm not the slowest. But the double sandbag is probably my worst obstacle, where I lose the most ground. In Seattle, I got to that obstacle in the top 10, and I probably dropped to the mid-20s, maybe almost 30th place. And I had to fight my way back up into the top 10 at that race.
You know, Nicole Miracle said the double sandbags is an area she's really focusing on. And I asked her, how the heck do you work on that? Is it just, you know, log more weight over more miles? But Nicole was talking about the best way to hold them or pick them up. Is that kind of what you're working through as well?
Yeah, I mean, It is a lot of technique and learning the right way to go about things. Like when I had no experience with the double sandbag, I had no idea, so I just kind of tried to pick them up, see how it went, and now I've like found better techniques to make it a lot easier for myself. So I still just don't have the brute strength quite yet for getting them up onto my shoulders, but I'm working on it.
Hey, VJ, I think it's wild that so many eyes are on the championship series, which, you know, of course is on NBC, and folks talk about the top three at those Saturday Supers, three of which you were in the top 10. But then, at both Seattle and Asheville, you came back the very next day to win the sprint. And, you know, it's almost an afterthought in comparison. Have you felt that at all?
Yeah, the entire championship series was supers until the last one, which was the Beast in West Virginia. I think that they should have more of a variety, honestly. They should put a sprint, you know, then three supers and a Beast so that you get more of a range.
Yeah. Well, we would have loved to have seen you here in Texas for the U.S. OCR Championships, because I think you could have rocked the 3K, probably in the top three, maybe win it all.
Yeah, I really wanted to get out there this year. I just didn't have the budget yet. Next year, for sure, it's going to be one of my primary focuses, because seeing the way the race was designed and how it was set up, it seemed like a really, really cool event.
Oh, it was. Yeah, the 3K and 15K, which, don't get me wrong, I think it's super impressive to see these guys, you know, knock out these longer races with more steam than I have left after a short one. But I just don't think it takes a beast to showcase how good and tough you are.
Especially in Tahoe, this year's going to be almost 17 miles. So it's going to be brutal for no particular reason. So I think that the future of the race, people like the longer distances. It's kind of become like a characteristic of what Spartan is. Honestly, the world championship should be a super. It's the medium distance. You get the faster short distance guys, and then you got the long grind guys that can both compete at a set distance.
Yeah, well, it's a good blend, you know, where the running doesn't overshadow the obstacles, you know?
Yeah, I experienced that in West Virginia. It was so much running in between obstacles, and I've grown to love the obstacles, and running used to be my strength, and now obstacles kind of give me a chance to catch back up. Since this year I didn't train all that hard. It was more of a feel it out and experience a full season, because I'd never trained this long. My cross country seasons in high school were, you know, 2 months or 3 months maybe of hard running, and then, you know, you take 2 months off again. And this has been almost a full year of racing, so I really took it easy because I didn't want to injure myself and stuff. Since I'm so young, I hear a lot of people talking about push too hard too early and, you know, hurt yourself. So my running has kind of suffered this year from that. Yeah, so the Beast was too much for me to handle. My body shut down about 12 miles in, and I ended up walking about the last mile because I was cramping so bad.
Well, along with using this year to figure out your role in all this, you've had a chance to line up shoulder to shoulder with some of the all-time best. Have you gotten to know these other pros and, you know, the veteran racers very well?
Yeah, some of the guys on the team have been really welcoming. Like Hobie was like the first person on the team that really like came up to me and spoke to me, rather than just, you know, seeing me there and kind of ignoring me. And he's a really great guy, and I mean, he's amazing. He's been, you know, racing for so long, and he basically created the professional side of the sport. Yeah, and then eventually I got to know Robert. Robert's a pretty cool guy as well. I mean, he works harder than I think anyone out there. He races so often. I'm surprised he lasts all year the way he does.
Right. Well, Killian's all about endurance. I'm sure he prefers those longer races.
Yeah, it's definitely his bread and butter.
Well, and these guys have been racing so long, I would think there's a lot of opportunity to learn around them.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up a couple things from them here and there, but the main thing is that I almost regret the way that I took this year. I just tried to relax as much as I could. Whenever I felt I was working a little hard, I backed it off. I just didn't want to hurt myself and end my career early. But like this coming year, I have a lot bigger plans, a lot bigger aspirations. I think that I can break onto that podium at a lot of these U.S. Championship Series races, because I'll be going all in this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get wanting to play it safe, but for different reasons, of course. You're thinking about your career. I just know I'm old and don't recover very well. But when you say going all in next season, what does that mean in terms of these longer races? Because you're right, that's the direction Spartan continues to go. No real sign of changing anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to bump up distance. West Virginia actually was my first Beast that I had ever done.
okay.
So that was new territory for me.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Mainly next year, I'm going to be focusing on supers. Supers is going to be the distance that I really work for because that's the primary length in the series. And then U.S. OCR champs and then World OCR champs are also closer to a super distance than a beast distance. So towards the end of the year, I'll start working more for the longer events as they come, like for the World Championships and such. But my main focus for the year is going to be the super distance and try to perfect that race and adapt to it.
Right. Well, fortunately, you're young enough that there's so much time and room for growth, even though you're already a great racer. I should also mention you're a great ambassador for the sport, especially with Junior Spartans. Came across a number of videos of you online kind of helping and working the crowd there with the junior racers.
Yeah, that was cool getting to like interact with them and, you know, start the race with them and congratulate the winner and stuff like that. So I just kind of wanted to be part of it personally, just hang out and show some support for, you know, the kids racing, because I know a lot of kids at that age don't want to get out and do stuff, but seeing them out there is pretty cool.
Sure. Well, it's cool to see you do that, and it's a neat way to give back. So let's talk about Tahoe. We already mentioned it's going to be an especially long distance, which is not necessarily how you've been training this year. So how are you going to approach the championships?
I've been thinking about how I'm going to go with this race. There's a side of me that wants to, you know, see how well I do overall and just relax, take it smooth, and see if my body can handle it and if we can get a good result. But then also, since next year I want to compete, I really want to get in with these top guys. I was thinking about taking the first 10 miles of the race and racing the race like a super, see how fast they go, see what it really takes to be one of the top guys and race in that top three, top five group.
Yeah.
So that was that's also run through my mind. I haven't quite decided how I'm going to go about it, but it'll definitely be a tough race.
Yeah. Well, man, this is neat to see you early in your career still figuring out where you fit in and how well you compete against the best.
Well, that's kind of what this year was about. It was kind of feeling it out, but then also proving myself, you know, proving that I have a place here. Because there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, have a little better results than I do right now, and I'm sure would have loved to have been on the pro team. I mean, Spartan pro team, that's a pretty big deal in the sport right now. I think that I kind of proved myself to be a decent competitor in this sport, and I know I can keep up with these guys. I've always known that, looking around, especially since I'm so young. I have a long ways to go. Specifically, endurance athletes don't peak until their early 30s, so technically for the next 10 years I can just get better and better and better.
And are you doing this alone, or do you have a coach?
I just started working with a coach, and he's a really knowledgeable guy. He's going to help me get to that next level that I need.
Cool. And is it a running coach or an OCR guy?
Yeah, his name's Richard Diaz.
Oh, wow. Of course. Yeah. Richard Diaz has the Natural Running Network. I'll look for that online. But I know Hunter and Rose, and I think Faye has worked with Richard.
Yeah, I just started working with him. So he's helping me with everything, you know, my strength training. It's mainly the running and then being able to mix running with the obstacles into my training and everything. So he's just helping me structure everything correctly and be able to go about it the right way.
Yeah. Well, he's the man for running. In fact, you know, I think Yancey Colt partners with Richard when working with clients that want to up their endurance running. So, man, what a 1-2 punch those two would be. But Richard seems to be a good guy to be working with. Well, VJ Jones, you've got a super bright future ahead of you. I know we're just going to see you on the podium more and more for many years to come. So thank you so much for spending time with us, and good luck this weekend.
Well, thanks a lot, man. And of course, I love to be part of this kind of stuff, talk about the sport. So, thanks for having me on.
Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and at themudmovement.com.
Man, super cool cat. Glad we got to talk to VJ. We'll talk to a champion of a different type in a minute. Also, if this is your first time to listen to the show, well, thank you very much. I hope you like it enough to spread the word. But I also want to tell you that there is a faith element to what we do at the Mud Movement, but I don't want to force it on anyone. So after the show comes to an end, there'll be one more short bonus segment where today we'll talk about faith and obstacles. So you can stick around if you're interested or bail at what seems to be the end of the show. Right now, though, I promise to tell you the backstory of my hormophobia. Remember, that's the fear of electric shock. So I raised and showed sheep when I was in school. And I never raised more than one or two at a time, but it was still enough to need an electrical fence. And along with feeding and walking the sheep, one of my responsibilities, of course, was to round up the sheep anytime they got out of the fence and, get them back where they belong. Then it was my job to figure out how they got out. Was the fence broken? Is it losing power? Is there something like touching the line causing trouble? But whatever it was, it always ended with me testing the fence. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wasn't there a meter or a light or some way to know if the fence was on? Yeah, you would think so, huh? And yes, most every electric fence out there has that option. But I guess dear old dad didn't see the point in spending a few extra bucks for flashy lights and meters. Not when you got a perfectly healthy idiot son to test it for you. And I'm sorry, I haven't explained it yet. Testing it consisted of karate chopping it or flicking it or basically anything but actually grabbing it. A cruel and unusual punishment if you ask me. So yeah, you see why the idea of being shocked repeatedly at Tough Mudder this weekend is digging up some trauma I worked really hard to bury.
Whatever doesn't kill us, better run. The More Than Mudcast.
So I remember distinctly walking to my car after my last race, and these two guys in front of me started an instant friendship based on only two things. They both love racing, and they both had some serious beards. Seriously, that's how the conversation started. It was this mutual admiration for each other's beards. And you're thinking, well, what's so special about facial hair? Well, if you think anyone can grow and pull off a sweet beard, you've clearly never been to a facial hair contest. And you've probably never spoken to this man right here. He was the first place winner of the full beard freestyle category, as well as the best in show winner at the 2017 World Beard and Mustache Championships. It's Mr. Jason Kiley. Jason, welcome.
Hello.
Jason, let's be clear. Best in show at the World Beard and Mustache Championships. That sounds like top dog, the most glorious beard in all the land. Is that basically it?
Yeah, I was completely surprised to get it, especially at this event. But yes, I was judged as having the best beard for the 3-day event, which is an incredible honor.
You also got first in the freestyle category. Now, for folks listening who haven't seen your picture, describe for us what it looks like and how you style your beard.
It is actually pretty difficult to describe without a picture. The last style I did, people compared me and my beard, I suppose, face to a pretzel. In the past, a lot of people describe it as like the Kraken is stuck to my face, octopus, and so it's not your typical beard that you see every day, and nor is it something that I do every day. I mean, for the most part, my beard is just in a braid like every single day.
No, I think you described it well. What about when you just brush it out and, let it lay natural or in a braid? How long would you say it is?
Oh, it's down to my belt buckle now.
Really?
It's a pretty long beard and pretty full as well.
And what kind of weapons do you need to tackle a beast like that? Is it, we're using a comb, a pick?
It's a can of hairspray and a blow dryer. I just form everything by hand. I mean, it took me about 4.5 hours to do that style that I won at Worlds. It can be pretty time-consuming to do as much as, I suppose I did for that event. Because, it was the largest beard and mustache competition ever held.
Man, I'm looking at this picture, and I can't help but think, you're probably constantly aware of this added weight on your face, almost exhausting.
Yeah, you become, hyper-aware of your surroundings when your beard is now styled, wider than your shoulder width. You have to walk around knowing that at some point you're also going to be judged on this. So anyone coming in for hugs or pictures is slow it down. It is for fun, but you're putting in hours of work. You want it to look as good as it can for the judges. And so, yeah, by the end of the night, it's not so much the weight. The hairspray doesn't do that much more, but when you basically engulf all your facial hair in hairspray, it just pulls all the skin on your face just tight. It's all the beard hairs locked in place and all locked together. And usually by the end of the night, you have a pretty sore neck and back from trying not to move your head too much to hook on shoulders or anything else.
So Jason, clearly you've been growing this for a long time. When was the last time you had a smooth, freshly shaven face?
I couldn't even tell you the last time I was shaved down or even the last time I've seen my chin. Probably 15 plus years. This current beard is between 4.5 and 5 years of growth. But for 15 or 20 years, I've always just had a beard. There's always summer beard and winter beard.
Yeah, and how long have you been competing?
I went to my first contest about 4 years ago now. It was so much fun. People were super nice. I didn't start freestyling until, I think it was been 3 years ago. I think I was going around to contests and stuff for a good year before I started freestyling. But I knew I wanted to get into it. I have a art background, and I just thought it would be really funny to work real hard at getting good at styling my beard hair. I didn't think anything would ever come of it. I mean, it was just this goofy thing to go, and like I'm just like I worked real hard at just getting as good as I could be at styling facial hair, just because I thought it was just this weird art thing that, I mean, it was just fun and silly to do, and you hang out with your friends in different cities. It was just a good time.
So listen, I want listeners to know that it doesn't have to be OCR. Competition is competition. And so can I assume it felt like that? Were you anxious going into the championships? Did you feel the nerves?
Oh, yeah. For Worlds, I was losing sleep for about a week up to the event just because I was so nervous. I'm a pretty anxious person anyways, and so I was really nervous. I mean, like, I knew what style I was going to do. I practiced it, like, or gone through a couple times before the event. But, I mean, it's really all down to those 4 hours or however much you put into it that morning before the event. Because just because you've done it a couple times and it looked really good, a little too much hairspray or you crush a curl or something, you can't just wash out like one piece or one part of it. You have to just kind of be like in the zone like the whole time when you're styling. You got to focus just on whatever you're styling at the moment. If you think about what you've already done and it's looking good or what you still have to do and the amount of time you have left, at least for me, that's usually when I mess something up. And so I guess the wind styling, I guess, is the closest to like kind of a zen moment for me of just constantly being like right in the present. Because if I don't focus, if I let my mind wander, I mess things up. And then you just got to keep going forward and figure out how to make it work or how to fix it.
Yeah, you know, I think that's applicable for what you do, what we do, and most any competition. You know, you can train and train for it, but no, it's never a foregone conclusion. There's still the element of whether things will go right or not.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, in the beginning, when I was learning to style, very rarely could I pull off, like, even what I wanted to do or what I practiced, like, the actual day of a contest. And so, I mean, like, it was just through all those failures that I just learned how to get so much better because I was constantly just learning how to adapt or how you can just kind of fall back on something like, well, this part's not working, but I know I can do this. And so I guess through all those failures, I mean, like your bag of tricks of just keeps it getting deeper because you just know that there's something there that you can do if something doesn't work.
All right. Well, Jason, congratulations on your victory and your title. Let's end with this. For that hopeful beard grower out there who's on the verge of shaving it all off because it's just not coming in the way he wanted, what tips or wisdom can you give for growing that perfect beard?
Just be patient. There is no magic formula. There's no magic serum. I mean, there's stuff out there that can make your beard, like, healthier or stronger. But, I mean, there's nothing out there that's going to make your beard fuller or grow more hair follicles. If you want to grow a good beard, I mean, just wait and see what happens. Like, a buddy, MJ, likes to say, you don't know until you grow. And so you just let it happen.
Why run it? Jump it, carry it, climb it, or crawl under it, because it's there. You're listening to the More Than Mudcast with Coley.
Hey, our friend Arnell Banawa just released a new video profile of Coach Payne. So if you're a fan of Coach Payne, which we all are, or if you're just a fan of Arnell's work, which we all are, check that out as soon as you get a chance. Also, let me wet your whistle for the next Mudcast. You're going to hear the story of Colleen Ricks, and Colleen is on the Conquer the Gauntlet Street team and is just a super tough lady. She has to be. You see, Colleen's husband lost his life in a tragic workplace accident, leaving Colleen to raise her two children and now nephew on her own. Fortunately, her faith and her love for OCR has helped Colleen find the strength she needs from others and within herself. We'll also talk to the OCR Kings out of Connecticut. You may have seen some of their obstacle videos. And finally, we'll talk to world record mountain climber Colin O'Brady about the Explorer's Grand Slam. Fascinating guy.
Hills, ropes, rigs, barbed wire, miles, mud, blood, sweat, and tears. Some call it torture. We call it Saturday. You're listening to the More Than Mudcast with Coley.
There's running for fun, running for time, and then there's running for your life. Sandy Reyes is the CEO of ActiveWorks. They produce Zombie Charge, the ultimate zombie obstacle experience. Sandy, where did this outbreak begin?
Zombie Charge started initially in the Northeast, Connecticut and New Hampshire, and spread out as a true zombie infection does to Miami and Houston.
Of course. Yeah, I heard that about Miami. Very prone to zombie infections.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a unique experience in different ways. What Zombie Charge really tries to do is we try to put in a lot of elements from other disciplines that people really enjoy into the race. So it is an OCR. It is an obstacle course race. We try to put out 15 to 20 obstacles for those who are going to run the race. We call those survivors. We're also unique because people can sign up as a zombie as well. So we hire a special team of makeup artists and special effects folks. You basically go and you do a whole transformation. The zombie's job is to basically grab the flags. I know some people have seen those type of races where they have flag belts, football flag type belts. And so they have also their role in the whole thing. As the survivors try to get through these obstacles, then they basically make it more challenging. So we're blending those elements in there, and also some elements of 5K trail running. We also have some American Ninja Warrior inspired obstacles, and some parkour motivated, I guess, obstacles as well.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, I think a lot of obstacle racers roll their eyes at zombie runs because they don't expect them to have any serious obstacles. It's not a challenge. Well, you guys have some serious obstacles. You just happen to have zombies, too, which is an extra obstacle in itself. Plus, you know, it's just fun, right? Let's not take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to piggyback on what you said. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I've done Tough Mudder. I've done this. I've done that. And I ask them, you know, well, you know, how did you do? Well, I didn't fail at any obstacle. So in Zombie Charge, there is no failure. There's only survival.
Yeah.
So when you go there with your family and your friends and your coworkers, and we are an open level, non-timed event. So it's not competitive. You don't have to rip your shirts off. You don't have to do anything crazy. You just need to survive however long it takes with each other, help each other out through the course, and basically the goal is survival. So we remind them of that. And so I really believe that when you look at the whole concept, it does challenge you because the people have done other events. They have gone through the mud and the obstacles, but they haven't been chased. And, you know, natural human instinct, when somebody chases you, you run. So or run a little bit faster. So we're just trying to incorporate that kind of idea. And then on the flip side of that, the whole idea after you survive a zombie charge is disaster preparation. So, you know, that's where our charity comes in. And that's where our idea of, okay, you made it past the zombies. Are you and your family ready for what's coming next, which could be the floodpocalypse, right? So that's kind of like our idea as well.
Well, that's the race. Tell me more about being a zombie.
Yeah, basically, if you're like, no, I can't run 5K, I'm gonna die. I don't work out that much, but I really love Walking Dead. I really love, you know, the zombie genre, horror movies, and I want to do the zombie thing. Then you can pick what type of zombie you want to be. So you can be a chaser, which is why we call Zombie Charge, with the charge part of Zombie Charge, is that you're a charger. 28 Days Later, World War Z, you know, that kind of zombie at short bursts. And then you can also be the zombies that you can, like, hide in the woods and hide in different, like, behind trees and things like that. And just, like, relive your childhood memories when you're just, you know, scare the crap out of your siblings, you know. I think that brings a little bit of an element of, you know, nostalgia for some people. And so we try to appeal to a lot of different people. And so, you know, we have the zombies out in the course, and then we have the zombies over in the festival area because, you know, in the festival area is where the trained zombies are, and you can take pictures with them. And so if you don't participate in Zombie Charge, then you're hanging out in the festival, listening to music, drinking beer, and taking pictures with zombies. So.
By the way, the Austin race is October 21st, just a little over a week before Halloween. And, you know, I was thinking about these teens who show up at our house. You know, they're too old to be trick-or-treating, but they still want to get in on some spooky fun. Why say load them up and let them be zombies, right? They'll have a blast. Plus, you guys do a good job of zombifying participants, right? That's a word, I think.
Absolutely. That's why we really partner with premier haunted houses in those areas. In Austin, Scream Hollow Halloween Park, and in Houston, Creepy Hollow Haunted House, which is voted scariest haunted house in the Houston area. But yeah, just to, yeah, it is, Austin is on the 21st of October, and Houston is on the 4th. of November. So those are the dates. And right now we're running a special that's going to be going away pretty soon for 25% off. The code is end of summer 25. And so people can at least get that last chance deal, or so to speak.
Sandy, give us a website to learn more about Zombie Charge.
Yeah, zombiecharge.com is our main website. We're also any of the main social media platforms. You just go / Zombie Charge and it'll take you there. So we're on Twitter and Instagram. And we also have a YouTube channel as well.
All right, the Zombies are charging Austin on October 21st and Houston November 4th.
It's more than mud. It's a movement. The More Than Mudcast.
Well, that's the show today. Thank you to VJ Jones. Best wishes to him at Spartan World Championship. Also, world champion beard grower Jason Kiley. I meant to ask Jason whether there's foods that he just has to avoid to keep it out of his beard. I'm betting he's not blowing and popping bubblegum bubbles. Going on a limb there. Finally, best of luck to Sandy Reyes and the Walking Dead over at Zombie Charge. Remember, they've extended that end of summer promotion to save you some money, so go check out their website. Hey, thank you for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Maybe consider leaving a kind review and telling a friend. Until next time, remember, everyone runs for a reason, so tell your friends. It's more than mud. It's a movement. Hey guys, thanks for hanging in there for this last little segment. Isn't it funny that we're so eager to take on obstacles on the course, but in real life, we practically beg for relief? You know, we ask, why me, and when will this end? The thing is, real-life obstacles are good for the same reason we treasure them on the course. They make us stronger. I know that's something we can appreciate in hindsight, but never when we're really going through it. But maybe that's something we should strive for. In fact, you may have seen a post I shared recently claiming that God loves obstacles. James chapter 1 says, "Consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." 1 Peter 4 says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed." And finally, Romans 5, verses 3 and 4, "We glorify in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, patience, experience, and experience, hope." So I hope that you and I can maybe do better when we face some of the obstacles that spring up on us in life. Instead of freaking out, let's remind ourselves what God has already gotten us through in the past and how strong we can be when He's on our side.